Yes, hello and welcome to another Tech Plus, where we unpack all this week's biggest tech stories. My name's Ian, with you for the next 60 minutes, as always joined by Kane. Kane, hello, how's your week been?
Good week.
Good week for you.
Yeah.
Because last week we didn't chat because you were in Joburg. What was Joburg like? Don't say what you said off air.
No. Joburg was great. We actually attended the Blockchain Africa conference.
Wow.
Which was a great collection of kind of guys that are building blockchain technologies in Africa.
My goodness.
We got to meet up with some of them.
What was it like? Nice? Enjoyed it?
It was really nice. You know, it was really well put together.
Mm-hmm.
They had some excellent speakers there, some really hard hitters in the speaking positions. Unfortunately, the attendance wasn't as much as you would see internationally.
Mm. Okay.
But it is very positive signs for Africa as a whole, for the technology that's coming to Africa. Because if you think about an average person that lives in Africa, they might be unbanked and they might even not have access to mobile technologies.
Mm.
Right? They might have a phone, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's a smartphone.
Yeah.
So, and they also struggle, you know, with bank accounts and all that sort of stuff. So cryptocurrency and a blockchain technology as a whole coming to somewhere like Africa has clearly got international attention. That was probably the most clear takeaway from that conference, is international people are coming into Africa and obviously South Africa as a result of that, in order to build infrastructure for the unbanked and for blockchain technology as a whole, not even just including things like cryptocurrency. Everybody always thinks, you know, cryptocurrency is what blockchain is all about, but cryptocurrency is only possible because of blockchain as a technology, and blockchain as a technology just allows for very secure data storage that, once stored, cannot be changed at a later date. And there were people who were paneling talking about bringing that technology into things like healthcare, where you have a secure storage of your patient information, and in the event that you can go to a doctor you hasn't been your general doctor before, he can easily access your patient information before even starting the diagnostic process. Yeah. And that's kind of the technologies that they're looking to bring into Africa that aren't just cryptocurrency related. So it was a very good conference and had a lot of good conversations there.
Please tell me you flew and didn't drive.
No way. I've done that before. Like, once is enough, you know.
What did you do? What did you fly?
We flew, yeah.
Okay, thank goodness.
Yeah. And it was via Safair, which is actually...
Was it nice?
Yes, it was expensive.
Yeah.
I think for two tickets was, you know, well beyond 7,000 Rand return ticket. So it was a pricey... It was a pricey ticket, but Safair always seems to have good prices, even though it is relatively pricey compared to your 750 Rand to Joburg flight.
Yeah.
But it still works out cheaper than most places.
Mm-hmm.
And they were also making quite a big mark. They just released their digital magazine, which I thought was quite interesting.
Yeah.
So they, when you go in the plane, they tell you, like, download the digital mag.
Okay.
Instead of a magazine in the chair. Interesting.
Yeah, because they used to have it like in your chair. Or
yes.
You could ask for it, but it's on paper. So save a tree.
Yeah, exactly.
That's digital.
Exactly. And who kind of, you know, that magazine has been read by a lot of people.
Exactly.
One person every flight, 20 flights a day.
Yeah.
Been there for five.
Oh
four
my
weeks,
gosh, you're right.
One
eh?
Magazine a week.
You're right.
I mean, a month. So
true.
I think it's a good move, and it's also more enjoyable browsing through that.
Oh, welcome back, man.
Thank you. We actually met with the general manager for Luno Africa, and we had a few chats with them. But Luno themselves actually is in the news today. They've appointed a new CEO. Right now, I'd say Luno, in terms of South Africa, is kind of at critical mass, meaning they have to start making decisions now to expand their business. And naturally, the CEO isn't necessarily stepping down, but moving into another area of the company, which is mainly focused on fundraising. And that fundraising will hopefully lead to something like a listing, a public listing, a stock, right? And to see a company that started out of South Africa, that found the success that they did in Africa, and then eventually go public and be a traded company, is good for crypto.
Yeah.
But it also shows where their kind of goals are now, expansion, and kind of leaning on that Africa is a hot spot right now. But very interesting. He was in the news. And another CEO is in the news this week as well. The CEO of TikTok.
Yeah, I said to you off air now, I couldn't believe it because I was obviously going, you know, through the videos, you swipe up, and then all of a sudden there's this man and he says, "Hello, I'm CEO of TikTok." I'm like, "Oh, that's what he looks like."
Yeah, so he was on TikTok, and I think they, you know, remember when we spoke about Elon Musk on Twitter when he increased the rate at which he appears in other people's feeds by 1,000% or 1,000x, even more than that. I think it was the same case here. So this is obviously building on, for anyone who doesn't know, USA is kind of very in a turbulent state right now with whether or not they should ban TikTok completely.
Yeah. Mm.
And Shaozi Chu, the CEO of TikTok, will be appearing before Congress to defend the app today. On March 23rd.
Oh my gosh. So, well, hopefully that's going well for him.
Yeah, well, so that video was actually kind of... it's like a charm offensive, really, in a way, ahead of the congressional hearing, putting him basically in users' feeds to warn them about the looming ban.
Mm.
He mentioned things like there are currently 150 million Americans who use TikTok.
Yeah, I heard that.
Which is like half of America. There are also 5 million U.S. businesses, which are between small and medium size, and they've currently employed 7,000 Americans.
Yo.
And it is less than the 10,000 or more that they had aimed for in 2020, but a big leap from the 1,400 U.S. headcount that they had in that year. So they've made some progress. There's employees, there's businesses, there's users, and... what has really happened in terms of Congress is they've also built a facilitation for them to shut down any technologies that might challenge the U.S. securities of public users. And as a result, there's kind of a situation now where, yes, they can easily ban TikTok, but also they have the power that is needed to ban anything that is of a digital nature that doesn't derive from the USA, which has its own advantages and disadvantages. So it's going to be interesting to see how his little video that he put in front of everyone,
I hope it helps him a bit.
Yeah, and it's weird because we're in South Africa and we saw it.
Yeah, so it just popped up. I didn't even know you can follow TikTok on TikTok. So I followed it because I didn't follow it. It was, I think obviously it appeared, it was kind of forced onto the For You page, which is the main thing where you see all stuff. But I mean, did you hear about the UK? They banned TikTok. If you're working in UK government, it's banned from your phone.
Wow.
So, I mean, what's your personal opinion? Do you think that this is actually going to happen in the USA, that they'll ban it completely? I think it will probably be a little more restrictive, but I don't really see a complete ban.
Well, there very likely could be a complete ban. I don't think that's completely out of the question. That's for sure. I think we saw it with Huawei.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it wasn't like, oh, we'll ban you a little bit.
No, yeah, that was a complete thing.
We'll try to cripple you completely.
Cripple, yeah.
To remove your ability to use the operating system.
I know somebody who got a Huawei recently and he's battling to get apps on that phone.
It is. It's still a problem and will continue to be a problem. And that's one ban, a result of one ban from the USA. So I don't think it's above them, but I do think that there are a lot more people that enjoy TikTok, that work on TikTok, that... consume educational information on TikTok.
Absolutely.
That are greater in numbers than how many people were using Huawei's in America.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
You're dealing with also between the ages of 14 and
much younger.
30,
which
can be very socially, digitally loud when something like this happens.
But I mean, people will be ruined in the United States of America because some people actually built careers on it. So, you know, you'll have to get your following to follow you to the next alternative, which would probably be Instagram. You know, because they make videos and stuff, and TikTok is, it's fun, man. Let's just, if the listeners are wondering why they want to ban TikTok, why? What's the reason? The reason, of course, is they fear that it's spying. The Chinese government is spying on wherever the app is being used. It's using the phone to get other information, which could be possible, because let me tell you, the other night I had a conversation with somebody on the phone about a car that was bought at We Buy Cars. We Buy Cars recently in the news again and on TikTok for allegedly selling, you know, bogus vehicles and problematic vehicles and all that kind of stuff. And just after I put the phone down, this video comes up, part two of that guy who exposed We Buy Cars. That's the first video I saw when I opened TikTok after that. I don't believe in coincidence.
No. So with something like that, I think America fears it because America does it already. Just like, look at Instagram. I mean, we've spoken about it before where you can have a conversation about a product or a service and you get advertised it. Like there's always on listening and things like that. So I think it's definitely a case of, you know, having any amount of data on half your population is concerning.
Yeah.
And I think they're making very real points. And there are strange things that happen on TikTok. Like sometimes I'll watch a live video and I'll minimize my app and it continues to play as if I haven't shut the app.
Yeah.
So there's definitely some stuff that's going on there, but it's all automated data collection. It's not like one person is peeling through everybody's data, but they have a very good idea of things, maybe like how many apps are installed in the device, how people found them, where people move, if their location services are active. It's a lot of information. I don't pass it past them to ban it, maybe on the short term. But you know, the first time they were going to ban it, they said, no, we're going to ban it because you have no U.S. arm. You know, there's no TikTok entity operating in the United States. Mm. So they created one and staffed it with 7,000 employees.
Okay.
And now they're facing the ban hammer again.
That didn't even help, yeah.
No.
I thought, you know, if we create job opportunities, at least you can keep us in the United States. But hey, at least we'll be able to use TikTok still here in South Africa.
Yes.
That's quite nice.
Yes.
So, sorry, Americans.
So here's another piece of information. Ferrari, right? We all know Ferrari, the car manufacturer, supercar manufacturer.
Yes.
Said it was hit by a ransomware attack that exposed information on their car makers' customers. Their customers, basically. So certain data relating to our clients was exposed, including names, addresses, email addresses, and telephone numbers, said the chief executive officer in Monday's message to clients that was seen by Bloomberg News. No payment details, bank account numbers, or details of Ferrari cars owner ordered were stolen, and the breach has no impact on the operation of the car maker. But that being said, somebody out there has all the customer-related information for people who bought Ferraris. I mean, you're not your everyday Joe buying a Ferrari, you know? So that data, they're lowering it down. It's like, no, it's not passwords or emails, but like, there's people on there that don't want to be on that list.
Yeah.
You know, they don't want to be known as a guy who owns a Ferrari, especially to random strangers
absolutely
on the internet that might try socially engineer some sort of scam.
Mm-hmm.
Email address, name, right? You might have some other corresponding database that shows you what bank they bank at. You make a fake email about being a bank. You send it to them, got their first name, address, all that sort of stuff on it. That's a social engineering event, definitely. And Ferrari also went on to say that they will not be paying or meeting any ransomware demands. So they've kind of just come public. Hey, we've been breached. It's happened. We're not going back from it. We are not paying anybody. So I think the guys that got into Ferrari are probably a little bit disappointed.
Yeah.
Damn.
They're not giving in.
But they can sell that database online.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
I'm sure they will. Yeah,
so they're not
right.
broke. The ransomware would have been on top.
They'll still make money, yeah.
Yeah. So that's the first thing. But in South African news, Vumatel and DFA, Dark Fiber Africa, two very big fiber companies in South Africa, have seen their revenues jump and their earnings jump 900%.
Whoa.
Over the last year, over the last 6 months of 2022. 900%. Bearing in mind that during 2021, they saw a loss of 23 million rand.
Oh, wow.
Right. And it looks like they've managed to make quite a retracement of that. So their earnings jumped from 696 million for 6 months ending in September 2021 to 1.17 billion over the same period ending in September 2022. So it shows you how quickly the fiber infrastructure is growing in South Africa.
It is.
There was definitely a time a few years ago where there wasn't much fiber.
Yeah.
I know that for sure.
Now there's not much ADSL.
So there isn't much. There isn't much ADSL.
Whatever was left of it corroded and got destroyed or was stolen. No, serious.
Copper cables, you know, not the best idea when copper's
gone.
Hot.
Yeah, exactly.
But is it time for music break?
Yes, what have you got first when we come back?
When we come back from the break, we're taking a look at Microsoft, which has inked another deal to capture and store its carbon emissions. And the amount of carbon that a company like Microsoft makes will absolutely astound you. But that's obviously their endeavor to reduce that. We're looking at Canva, the Adobe Premiere Pro alternative that's now come out with some AI tools that are once again challenging Adobe. We're taking a look at SpaceX and Starlink satellite internet providers are making a degree of light pollution for astronomers, something that we've spoken about early on, but now with a lot more satellites being launched, we can see that that light pollution much more. And that's what we're going to be looking at.
Awesome. That's when Tech Plus comes back. Here's Kygo with Callum Scott.
Lately I've been losing. These nights were more heartbreak and I'm done with this. Shadows on the ceiling, they don't fight, but I still argue for the hell of it. I'm trying my hardest now, I feel you reaching now. I don't wanna be the one that's always on the edge. You found me all messed up, you found me down on my luck, so lost. But then I woke up in love. When I was chasing highs, you went and saved my life. You picked me up. Thank God I woke up in love with you. Thought I was lost, but then I woke up in love with you. Thought I was lost, but then I woke up in love. Sometimes all those dark days, but they try to find me, but that's when I lean on you. Whatever happens, my trouble's behind me, cause your love's gonna see me through. Nothing can bring me down, I feel you reaching now. You're pulling me back when I'm about to reach the edge. You found me all messed up, you found me down on my luck, so lost. But then I woke up in love. When I was chasing heights, you went and saved my life. You picked me up. Thank God I woke up in love with you. Thought I was lost, but then I woke up in love.
That's Callum Scott with Kygo and Woke Up in Love. If you just joined us, hello, welcome to Tech Plus. Also, one of the listeners who just joined us, regular, can you guess who it is?
Who?
Susan.
Hey!
Susan is drinking coffee and listening to the show. She likes getting takeaway coffee, decaf. I think she listens to us. Yeah,
I can't. It's nothing wrong with a good Seattle coffee. I must say.
Do you drink decaf or do you drink the actual one?
No, the actual one.
Okay, because I also drink the actual one, the caffeinated one, and the other day it was so strong that I could hear colors.
Could vibrate through things.
Yeah, I was like, hyper alert. When somebody came from behind, I was like ducking.
But I don't find it a very enjoyable experience if you've got too much caffeine in
your body. It's not nice, eh?
No, it's almost like you're on super edge.
Yeah, exactly. You know? That but I was like
everything's
that.
Fine. You're I was just like, on edge.
I was like I was expecting a bomb to go off the whole time. So no to myself.
Every 5 seconds.
Yeah, exactly. No, true story. So no to self, drink decaf.
Yes. So on the Microsoft front, right, they've inked another deal to capture and store carbon emissions underground. Now, we have to go back a little bit. Microsoft, an early backer of emerging technologies that take carbon dioxide emissions out of the atmosphere, has agreed to purchase carbon removal credits from Los Angeles-based startup Carbon Capture. Carbon Capture has a massive facility called a direct air capture plant in the works in Wyoming, named Project Bison. The facility is projected to start running sometime in the latter half of 2024, and the startup has developed modular technology that draws in CO2 from the ambient air so that it can be stored underground, preventing greenhouse gas emissions contributing to climate change. So this isn't a traditional Microsoft move whereby they purchase an equity in a company and start deriving profits from it. This is more like they've purchased a number of carbon dioxide slots where they essentially pay for the carbon dioxide to be stowed away underground, not their carbon dioxide, just carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. And it works out to about $600 per metric ton of carbon dioxide. And with all of these slots that they've purchased, when Carbon Capture launches in 2024, they'll be using those slots, that funding for those slots, to stow 1 metric ton of carbon dioxide per $600. And that is one way that that Microsoft is trying to combat their carbon emissions. But also they have a goal of becoming carbon negative by 2030, meaning it would remove more CO2 pollution from their atmosphere than it generates through the use of fossil fuels. By 2050, Microsoft also plans to remove the equivalent of all its historical emissions since the company was founded. And that's a pretty tall order, to say the least, considering carbon removal technology doesn't yet exist at scale, which is needed for Microsoft to meet its climate goals. Microsoft is just a massive organization. They're, you know, I think I even read about what that is equivalent to. So greenhouse gas emissions for Microsoft started to climb again in fiscal year 2021. According to its latest sustainability report, Microsoft was responsible for roughly 14 million metric tons of CO2 emissions that year, which is about as much as 35 gas-powered plants. That's how much they would produce in a year.
Yeah.
So that's how much Microsoft produces, and their goal obviously is to remove that. That being said, carbon capture exists and expects to be able to capture and store around 10,000 metric tons of CO2, right? And they have 14 million metric tons. So you do the math, 14 million versus 10,000. It's hardly a smudge on the surface of the total emissions that they produce, but it's a start. And more importantly, it's not the only carbon capture slot that Microsoft has purchased. They've also purchased a number of slots from some other carbon capture solutions as well. Very interesting to see such a big company that focused down on it. It's obviously in some ways a PR mechanism, but in other ways it's real money, it's real carbon dioxide, and it really is getting stored. It has to be stored 12,000 feet underground though.
Yo.
That's where they're putting the carbon dioxide. 12,000 feet underground.
Damn, it's almost at the Earth's core.
No. Quite a few thousand kilometers away. But definitely, they pump it down into these things called saline aquifers. So they take a whole bunch of carbon dioxide, move it down 12,000 feet, and then they put it into these saline aquifers. But they have to capture the carbon dioxide. So they have these big container-like, you know, like a normal shipping container. They have like these modular shipping containers that when air blows through them and it's exposed to the atmosphere, it actually captures carbon dioxide. Then they take the carbon dioxide, compress it, send it down 12,000 feet and let it go. And that's how they remove carbon dioxide from the atmosphere. But I, quite to be honest, I still wonder, like, is that how long-term safe is that? I still need to read up on it. But, you know, it's there. It might be 12,000 feet down, but if we produce a lot of carbon dioxide, store it underground, it could, if it gets out some way, somehow, all at once, that's an even more daunting thing to try and deal with, which is maybe you've spent 20 years storing carbon dioxide, and all 20 years worth of carbon dioxide just erupts.
Yeah, flip.
Yeah, that's
a problem.
So it's very interesting to see what might happen there. But in other news, Canva.
Yes.
Anybody who doesn't use Adobe has probably looked at Canva.
A graphic designer's best friend.
Exactly. Yeah. Really good at helping.
And a social media manager.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, and it's really good at helping people design media for their brand.
Yeah, you're basically also lots of templates that you can legally use that other people designed and Canva paid them for. And then you can use those templates and you can look really good and say, oh, it's my design. But exactly. All you did was change the text.
But it works. It looks good and it gets someone's attention.
Exactly.
And the all-in-one design platform, which is what they term themselves as, has announced a host of new AI tools and branded workspace features. Now, we've seen AI come out as their own little entities. We've seen Microsoft adopt ChatGPT for Bing. But we don't often see a lot of companies integrating directly into their verticals, which is, in Canva's case, the ability to design using some AI-powered design tools focused on helping entire workplaces streamline their content creation process. So there's things like AI generative tools, things that you can use to take things out of backgrounds and foregrounds and magic erasers. And they call all of these tools magic, whatever. It's like a magic eraser and a magic upscaler and all these specific things. And you can do some stuff that's really cool. I must say they've added features that, let's say you're hiring a whole bunch of designers, but you have a very specific brand identity. You can limit those designers that are working on your business to a specific set of fonts, a specific set of colors.
Mm.
So they can't actually use a color in their design that isn't in the brand book.
Okay.
And then they have other smart tools as well, which is, let's say you're doing a corporate rebrand or just some sort of rebrand where your logo is changing. You might have hundreds and thousands of photos with your logo in it.
Mm-hmm.
And using Canva, you can change the logo on all of those assets in one go using AI smart tool functionality. So there's that kind of tools. And it's good to see someone like that popping up because Adobe does have a big monopoly over the design space.
Yeah.
But that didn't stop Adobe. Adobe just so happened to have released their AI tool now called Firefly.
Whoa.
They made an AI image generator. And we've spoken about some AI tools and specifically the copywriting behind it.
Mm.
If you train AI to make images, but you train it off of people's hard work that they have copyrighted and it can reproduce their copyrighted work as original work, there's a problem. Adobe knows that. So Adobe's Firefly essentially is only trained on content that is licensed to be used by them or out of copyright completely. So it's essentially an AI model that doesn't use any original content that it's not allowed to use in order to train. So everything they've trained it on, there is a caveat though.
Mm.
They said this includes media and documentation that is on their Adobe Stock platform. Adobe Stock is essentially a place you can go buy images and vectors and videos that you can use inside of your brand building or designing processes. And they say that they have the rights to use anything that's on Adobe Stock to train the AI. That is still made by a human.
Everywhere.
Right? So it's sort of there, but not really, but it's definitely going to be a powerful tool because that's how it's competing with other AI tools like Midjourney. And they want to obviously turn their whole suit to work with the AI. So anybody who's interested at all would probably be interested in something like Adobe Firefly because it's the designer suit image generator trained on non-copyrighted content. So it might be an avenue for certain businesses that are going into copywriting that use AI that want to patent their designs and their branding. That's going to be probably more logical to get through that process than some of the other options out there. But there are so many big moves on AI right now. We could talk about it all day.
Listen, you mentioned ChatGPT just a while ago, and I think, you know, it's impossible nowadays to do a tech show and not talk about it. But like you also said, you know, we could sit here all day and talk about it because it's all over the news at the moment. But one of the stories that really caught my attention this week is the South Park creators. We all know South Park,
yes.
The very funny animation that you really shouldn't show to your kids.
Yes.
Yeah, naughty, naughty animation. They, you know, they're always at the forefront, you know, like they recently made that very controversial episode about Prince Harry and Meghan and
yes.
Making fun of them. Now they used ChatGPT to write parts of a recent episode that was now in March as part of season 26, the fourth episode. It was written in part by that, and also the episode ends with the credits saying written by Trey Parker, that's the South Park guy, and ChatGPT.
Wow.
It actually gives it credit. And then they also said that some of the voices in the episode of the cartoon characters, namely the voice of ChatGPT itself, were created also using AI-powered text-to-voice generators. So they actually used that as well to voice some of the characters. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing that episode, season 26, episode 4.
I'm very excited to watch it. It's also very concerning because it means
it's hit
yeah. mainstream production now.
Yeah, it definitely.
If South Park can do it, who else can do
yeah.
it?
Yeah, you know? But I'm glad that they kind of use the opportunity to...
Definitely.
You know?
It's like Ryan Reynolds' ChatGPT ad
yeah.
about Mint Mobile that we spoke
yeah,
about
exactly.
a few weeks ago.
But listen, you know the Facebook memories that come up?
Yes.
I don't know how active you were on Facebook in the past, but... It comes up every day and you can see your memories, what you posted on that day, how many years ago.
Yes.
Mine today came up saying 13 years ago, I posted the following. So it was the 23rd of March, 2010. I was about 20 years old and this is what I posted for real, okay? People are making fun of me, I don't care. I'm going to read it. I can't stop listening to Justin Bieber's song Baby. It's truly the best song ever. If you haven't heard it yet, wake up, see the link I posted. That was me 13 years ago. How do we change? Like today, I still like Biebs, but I'm not like a huge fan. You know, I like some of his music. But I mean, if I posted that right now as the version I am right now, I'd be so embarrassed.
Yeah.
I can't stop listening to Justin Bieber's song Baby. You know that song?
Yeah. Who it's doesn't at this point?
It's truly the best song ever.
Is that what you said?
Now people are making fun of me and say, oh, thank goodness he saw the light 13 years later.
Took you 13 years.
But isn't it crazy how much we change, eh?
It
and
is.
What we posted on social media back then.
It is. It is absolutely
it's insane.
Crazy.
I couldn't believe it. I thought it was a joke. I couldn't believe I actually wrote that.
Speaking of change, we spoke about the 3D printed rocket.
Yes, and then it didn't make it.
Yes, so a few weeks ago we spoke about the Reality Spaces 3D printed rocket. They wanted to prove that you can launch a rocket that is 100% printed by 3D printing technologies.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
No human manufacturing involved outside of putting the pieces together, right? And they were going to launch, and then there was an abnormality, so they postponed it for an hour or two, and then they closed that completely, and they went back to the drawing board. Well, as of today, that rocket called Terran 1 went live via live stream and achieved a successful launch, making it the first proof that 3D printed rockets are structurally sound enough for spaceflight.
Wow.
Right? So what happened was, and it wasn't a complete success, we'll talk about that in a moment, but it went from a couple hundred kilometers per hour up, right? So it launched into the air and then it started accelerating into the air. Broke the speed of sound at 1,000 kilometers per hour, which was obviously the first feat, right? Can it break the speed of sound and not disintegrate?
Mm-hmm.
Very important question.
Yeah.
And then it continued to gain speed all the way up to over 6,000 kilometers per hour, heading towards orbit. And then there was an anomaly at stage 2, which didn't allow it to successfully hit orbit, but it is a milestone nonetheless. 3D
it
printed
is, man.
A rocket that is structurally sound enough to go at the speed of sound vertically and then times that by 6. It is pretty impressive. 3D printed technology.
I was going to ask you, can't we 3D print more power stations for South Africa?
You know, it's funny that you speak about 3D printing power stations because a few weeks ago we actually spoke about a nuclear facility that can be produced with
yeah.
only 3D printed parts.
Yeah, so surely, you know, we can... Print us a few power stations, you know. A new minister of electricity. If you're listening out there, print us a few new power stations, eh?
I don't know how confident I feel about it.
If you can print a rocket, surely you can print a power station.
Yeah, no. That seems logical. Now, speaking of building 3D projects and things like that, when we're talking digitally, this is taking something digital and turning it into something three-dimensional and physical through the use of something like a 3D printer, right? But what a group of people that work on 3D printing did, this I think is actually really funny, is they wanted to see, well, first we got to talk about what they did. They're basically MIT scientists that work on finding what materials will work best in a 3D printer. That's what they do. They test different materials. They squish them together.
It's a cool job.
See how they react and figure out whether it can be used to as an ink for 3D printing.
Mm.
But they re-engineered some of their resources recently. These are MIT scientists, right? Re-engineered a new study to find out what is the perfect way to twist an Oreo apart whereby both sides have the cream on them. Right? They dedicated an entire MIT science lab to discovering this process. And I think it's safe to say that there are many people that eat Oreos that way. They twist them apart and eat each side, you know, and sometimes you have the Oreo filling on the one piece and the other piece. But they wanted to find out how to do it in such a way that there's filling on both sides of the piece that you twist off. So what they did was they basically used their machines that test for how a liquid reacts when swished together to engineer specific ways to pull the Oreo apart, whether it's twisting it or going extremely fast or even using their slowest setting, which will split an Oreo apart in 5 minutes. Imagine taking 5 minutes to pull your Oreo apart so you can eat
leave it.
And what they found is nothing changes it.
Really?
80% of the time, the filling is on either side of the Oreo. But there is nothing you can do to induce a split down the middle.
Yeah, to have it equal.
Yes. So MIT is obviously in America, and that's what their findings were. But there were another...
Interesting.
Once they released their findings, another group of scientists from Europe... People are passionate about finding out more about Oreos, I must say.
It would seem so, yeah.
Another group of scientists from Europe tested Oreos that were made in Europe, and they found that it wasn't the case. They could more often than not twist the Oreo apart in such a way that it split down the middle and there was filling on either side. And they believe that might be the manufacturing process for Oreos in Europe versus the manufacturing process for Oreos in the USA. Teams of scientists got together to discover this information for
what us. What a fun project. Yeah, you know, this is like my 3 a.m. thoughts, you know. I would be in bed at 3 a.m. and I'd be like, hey, I wonder if I could split an Oreo in the middle and have it on equal side. You know, the other night I was Googling at 3 a.m. why did the Bee Gees sing in such weird high-pitched voices, you know? All these kind of random 3 a.m. thoughts.
Well, that's a very interesting question.
Apparently it was their kind of style and falsetto voices or whatever, but it's just stuff that keeps you awake, and then you have to Google it and learn a bit, you know?
Yes.
Ooh, it's time for a music break.
What do we got?
What have you got? I've got Harry Styles. What have you got?
After the break, we're taking a look at WhatsApp group calls coming to computers.
You're going to be happy?
Yes, I'm very happy about that.
Yes.
We're going to talk about some crazy technology that's coming out from Epic Games and Unreal Engine. I mean, we spoke about the Mandalorian that was produced on Unreal Engine, but we have yet to see how crazy it's getting. It's mad. We're going to talk about that. And then we're also going to take a look at an interesting book publishing strategy that was recently used by a popular fantasy fiction series that went viral on Twitter and Reddit.
Ooh. That's fascinating. I like publishing and that stuff. Let's hear it. When we come back, of course, here is Harry Styles.
Holding me back. Gravity's holding me back. I want you to hold out the palm of your hand. Why don't we leave it at that? Nothing to say, and everything gets in the way. Seems you cannot be replaced. just wants to know that you're well. Oh, in this world, it's just us.
It's Harry Styles and As It Was, you know, and it's so fitting now, that song, because I just quickly want to tell everybody, and including you, Kane, about this magazine, you know.
Okay.
Because we loved, you know, like after school, back in high school in the early 2000s, you'd love to, you know, just go into the CNA or whatever after school and go and check out if your latest copy is there of your favorite magazine.
Yes.
Buying it, you know, smelling the ink. I don't know if I'm just a nerd that way, but I used to buy the magazines and they smell so nice, you know, and the paper's all crisp and fresh. There's something about printing media that, yes, that's fantastic, except for newspapers that get off on your fingers, the ink. But a very sad story this week. In fact, about 6 days ago, TV Plus, one of the publications, announced that it's publishing its very last issue on the 23rd of March, which is today. And they said they've been going for 23 years. They published over 3,588 issues.
Wow.
Of this magazine. And just like that, overnight, they're informed by Media 24, the owner, that it's just not profitable. It's not worth the print. They're closing it down. All those people have to find new jobs. Once again, death of print, evident, digital media taking over.
Definitely.
We're seeing it again. I mean, they just don't stand a chance. Everything is so immediate nowadays. It's on social media. You're not going to wait for tomorrow's paper.
No.
And if you're an older listener, maybe you'll differ. And I agree with you that it's nicer to have a physical copy in your hand. I actually prefer that, especially when it comes to books. But very sad that magazines are going this route, eh?
Yeah, I think it's safe to say that the smaller magazines are going to struggle the most. I think the established magazines have a place and will have a place for a long time. But I think if you're a smaller, you're competing for very little eyes, you know, and you've got to stand out. And
it's very sad because it's been a dream of mine to have an actual magazine, you know, in print. I don't want a digital magazine.
Yeah, like you spoke about earlier. Physical print.
Just a physical one with glossy pages and whatever. But I mean, realistically, economically, it doesn't make sense.
I used to love the Popular Mechanics magazine.
Yes.
Even though it's international.
Do you still get that?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so it's still going. Right?
It is good. It's
okay.
A good one.
I know a lot of them, like these guys, they were also digital, but it just wasn't enough to pull them through. They just didn't sell enough hard copies of the magazine.
Well, if I buy a and this brings us on to our next topic, which I think you're going to find fascinating. If I buy a magazine and I give it to you and you give it to someone else, and in that month 50 people read it, the magazine company only made money once.
Yes.
Right? And if you look at something like digital magazines that are rolling off of subscriptions, most of the time everybody that does read it has paid something for it that month. Especially if it's a subscription-based digital magazine.
Yeah, you're right.
And if you buy an ebook off of Amazon, for example, it's not easy to give it to your friend. It's easier, in fact, for them just to go buy a copy of the ebook.
Yeah.
So this particular popular fantasy fiction series went viral on Twitter and Reddit because they realized this. They're like, okay, you know what? We're printing a book here. We got to find a way to let people know that they can't give it to their friends. Right?
Yeah.
So It went viral on Twitter and Reddit, and posts showed the copyright page, which tried to ban people from sharing the book with anyone, telling them to buy more copies instead, a clause that one expert said would be laughed out of court. And this is the clause that they have on the book. So imagine you buy this book, and on your first page, this is a clause that you read. This book is licensed for your personal enjoyment only. This book may not be resold or given away to other people. If you would like to share this book with some other person, please purchase an additional copy for each recipient. If you're reading this book and did not purchase it, or it wasn't purchased for your use only, then please return to your favorite book retailer and purchase your own copy. Thank you for respecting the hard work of this author.
Whoa, okay.
Whoa. Well,
they mean business. But still, you get people, they won't even read that.
No. No,
people don't care about
it. People aren't going to listen to it.
No, it's okay.
I think some people, look, if you want to support it, I think this fundamental message could have been reiterated in a different way.
Yeah, right? You're right.
Maybe shed some light on the statistics for how many books are shared, and exactly, that if a person wants to really support the book and find it enjoyable, buy a digital copy.
That will get the message through, but this was a bit blunt.
But saying we'll take you to court if you dare share this. Don't share this with your mom, your friend, no one.
Well, keep your book, you know.
No,
people are like that.
We'll be on
you. Keep your book.
SEAL Team 6 will storm through your front door to collect the book. Don't mess, you know.
Yeah, like they used to scare us into pirating DVDs, you know. Like the FBI is going to come through your roof if you watch a pirated DVD and all that stuff. And for a moment, we believed it. Or if you used Napster,
that
kind of stuff. FBI, they've got your address coming for you through your roof.
You know, that for me is just a weird feature to include in your publishing.
That is, yeah, that's very, very strange.
But speaking of weird features, and this is actually kind of something that I've definitely noticed, right? So Samsung has this feature for the new S23. I have the S21. But for the new S23 models, they have this feature, and it's called the remaster feature, right? Which basically you feed it a photo and it remasters it to look better. But they don't claim that it uses any AI or machine learning or anything. They just adjust some filters and makes it better. But one user went to The Verge and let them know that this remaster feature had done something very strange to their young child. So they had a 7-month-old baby.
Oh no.
That they had a picture of that they fed into Samsung's non-AI remastering filter. And it gave him a full set of full-grown teeth.
Oh no.
The 7-year-old child.
What? Oh, that's
freaky. 7-month-old child.
That's
Jeez,
freaky.
I'm getting ahead of myself, yeah.
7 months with full-grown teeth.
So you see, like,
that's crazy.
He's got full-grown teeth in the next photo. I don't know what happened.
Yo, that's creepy.
Because it's not even AI. Like, even teeth whitening filters make what teeth should be whiter.
Yeah,
but it like mistake the baby's tongue for a full set of grown teeth.
Oh my word. They must have had such a good laugh, eh?
Right, but it does show a little kink in the armor a little bit, because it shows that they are using some kind of AI there.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't...
It's a bit stupid, but
a filter doesn't make sense to me to create real looking teeth. Like teeth that you could be like, those are definitely a pair of full grown teeth, you know? And Samsung has made a lot of public awareness about their ability to capture photos of the moon. And now people believe that potentially Samsung's so-called scene optimizer might use AI to quote-unquote fill in the gaps when you zoom up to the moon. Because you can zoom up to the moon at 100x like you're in a telescope and you can take a picture of it. And I've done it to friends and they're like, that is unbelievable.
It is.
But it could be just AI recreating a scene of the moon because it knows you're looking at the moon and it's got 100 million pictures of the moon and it modifies your image to look like those images, just like AI image generation works. So that's a little conspiracy to think about. Like me myself, I've taken lots of photos of the moon and I wonder, like, well, how real is that? Like, how digitally optimized or AI influenced is that perfect photo of the moon that Samsung claims is how powerful their cameras are? Weird.
Yo, but you know, this week I spoke to a girl and she took photos of a bunch of ants in a kitchen and she 100x'd it or something. And now she's afraid of ants. Because she says they're so ugly and their eyes are all weird and stuff. And now she says there's this huge one and it's like he's giving orders, like he's the military. this one big ant giving orders, like, and the others are like slaves. She saw it with a camera of a phone on 100X, and now she's afraid.
I wonder if that's what aliens think about us when they first got to observe humankind from their telescopes.
I'm sure.
Speaking of crazy stuff, so actors can now transform into a digital real-time version. That word real-time is very important, because if you're going to be filming a movie with a lot of green screens, you've seen those people wear the shirts with the little balls on them.
Those balls, yeah. Yes, what do they do with those balls?
It shows you anatomy, how it's moving. Can understand arm movements and leg
those
bend.
Those white stickers or balls or whatever.
So that usually would have to be captured, and then it goes to VFX artists who spend a long time loading in a changed version. It's like seeing a monster or something like that, a real life monster in a movie. It's probably some guy wearing one of those suits that has been digitally optimized. But this is talking about transforming people into a digital version in real time, right? And it's all part of Epic Games' MetaHumans work, which takes real world scans of people and runs the digital version in real time on top of PC hardware with very strong graphics card called RTX graphics cards. And Epic's hyper realistic MetaHumans will even be able to be animated using an iPhone. Real time digital recreations of people with a phone at the CGI VFX quality of something like an action scene in Spider-Man, because in the new Spider-Man everything's VFX. All the jumping around, acrobats, bullets, it's all CGI. And to be able to create real-time CGI for everyday users off of their phone and done inside of a game engine. Right, let's say I want to bring myself into a game, so I just film myself doing something, and now I have the cinematic intro for my game. And you think about AI, you know, you have to go look at the video, but what it basically is, it's a person who's got like a phone staring at their face, and in real time they're digitally optimizing it into something that looks like it's out of an extremely high-end AAA game in real time. And that's the power of things like Unreal Engine. The whole of The Mandalorian was filmed using Unreal Engine, which is a game engine built for making games.
Yo.
And it can make scenes so realistic that you can put it in a AAA movie or series like The Mandalorian and no one is the wiser. Because everything you watch in The Mandalorian, most of the backgrounds, all of that sort of stuff is just digital renders of a 3D world that they built, you know, leaf by leaf.
That's crazy.
It's just a digital world.
It's amazing, hey?
That's
I'd love
super
to sit with some of those creators and see how they do it. It must be very time consuming. And can you imagine the power of those systems as well? People doing CGI.
It's unreal. And they have some of the most advanced technology to track camera movements so that it correlates with the screen in the back. You got to go watch it on YouTube. It's absolutely mind-blowing, the technology, because it replaces green screens.
Yeah.
So instead of having a green screen and adding in all, it's a live video in a 3D world that moves with the camera and has the perspective change. It's a hell of a machine.
Yeah.
But Unreal Engine is also free.
What?
So the technology that they used to make The Mandalorian is a free technology. Anyone in the world can download it and play with it.
Wow.
The difference is after you make $1 million, that's where you start paying.
Okay, well, that's fair enough.
You have access to technology that's
crazy.
Being used by the best of
Why
the best.
Why is it free?
From the guys who created Fortnite to the guys that made The Mandalorian, you can get behind the driver's seat and use the software that they used to make that.
How can it be free?
It's unreal.
It's too good to be true.
It's Unreal Engine.
Jeez.
It's incredible. But
listen, you know those Roombas?
Yes.
Those vacuum cleaners?
Yes.
I saw recently one woman's Roomba drove away out of her house while it was busy cleaning. It just drove away and it just left her. And she's still looking for it now. Just drove out the front door and it didn't come. And then another incident recently, a woman was sleeping, probably very low on a floor or near a floor, and the Roomba came and it actually started sucking up her hair.
I saw that
And
meme.
Then she was all entangled in this thing, and then there's this meme going around saying the robots are taking over, you know.
And so it begins.
And so it begins, that's it. But yeah, imagine you probably shouldn't be sleeping on the floor.
Careful
with your
what
Roomba
you make your
active.
Roomba clean.
Yeah.
That's the moral of the story. It's just, you know what I mean?
Yeah, it just
I really
comes
want
sucks
Roomba.
Up your hair. That's quite, it hurts.
I really want a Roomba.
Pulls your hair.
I love the idea of it.
A lot of rich people, I think, in Joburg or
Sandton. It's not that expensive, though. It's about, I mean, it's 4,000 rand. It's pretty expensive for a vacuum. A vacuum is pretty expensive.
Yeah, but it cleans your whole house. It's not bad.
Yeah.
And it tells you where it is as well, and when it's stuck, it doesn't tell you when it drives away, apparently.
No, that's, he's filed.
Or Roomba hurt when it goes down the stairs. Roomba hurt, send help. I love the sense of humor also of some of these robots, eh?
I know, I love it when they do that as a branding thing as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, you know? It's nice, it's funny.
So, Microsoft Edge, you use it, don't use it?
The browser. I've heard that it is quite nice and faster than Chrome, but I don't know. I don't use it. I'm still on Chrome. How about you?
I'm also Chrome and Firefox and that sort of stuff. I think Microsoft... Well, remember Internet Explorer? That was terrible. I think that made a bad name for Microsoft. Then they changed...
Very bad.
...or recreated a new browser called Microsoft Edge.
Yes.
And we saw it dormant for a while. In fact, if you go onto a computer that's newly installed with Windows, Microsoft owns Microsoft Edge. It's their browser, right? So the same guys that make your Windows 10 operating system are the same guys that make Microsoft Edge. And if you try and go on Google, because when you launch your computer for the first time, you'll have Microsoft Edge default installed.
Default, yeah.
But maybe you're a Chrome guy. So you go and you search Google Chrome download.
Yeah.
It'll come up on the screen and be like, don't worry, Microsoft Edge is a perfectly good browser. you don't need Google Chrome.
Sneaky.
So in light of that, using a joke to kind of intro it, is Microsoft's very focused on reviving Microsoft Edge. That's why they partnered with ChatGPT to make Bing AI, which is basically ChatGPT-4 with some Microsoft flair. And we spoke about it when Microsoft bought 70% stake in OpenAI's ChatGPT, right? It was their $10 billion investment into ChatGPT. And as a result, they acquired ChatGPT-4, which is the AI that runs on Microsoft Bing. And now they're also integrating a cryptocurrency wallet natively into Microsoft Edge as well. It's another feature that they're adding, which is strange to see a browser do, because imagine you downloaded Chrome for the first time and you've got a cryptocurrency wallet on it. Not everybody uses cryptocurrency, but I definitely think they're recognizing the digital currency shift.
Definitely.
I think they're trying to get an edge with all these different tools and features. And I would just end it with saying, you know, when someone's trying really hard to bring new tools to the market and everyone's kind of like, you know, we don't know if it's going to work, it's probably going to work. Especially when they're pumping billions into it. Where the needle will land in terms of what is the final product that is Microsoft Edge is still to be known, but a lot of people don't like Microsoft Edge and are going to take a lot of offense to them trying to come back.
But there's a lot of things, you know, attached to it, negative things and thoughts and ideas about Microsoft Edge. As a result of it, people know that it's the old Internet Explorer.
Yes.
And we know how hectic and how terribly bad that browser was and how insecure
it was. Bad.
It was also.
It was bad. And they have no fear trying to force people into Microsoft Edge. When Windows 11 first released, it was incredibly difficult to change your default browser.
Yeah.
So they're very abrasive with how they do it.
But if you had to say what is your browser of choice, you can only give one answer. What would it be?
Firefox.
Really?
Open source. Definitely.
Really? Firefox.
You can go read the source code that powers your browser. So you can know.
So Firefox, no doubt.
I would say it's strong competition between Firefox and maybe other smaller browsers as well that focus on niche services. Like you get Surfshark's browser that's all about privacy. You get Brave browser that's all about a different ad network
and
that pays
Opera
you. There's Opera GX, which is all about like a gamer browser almost, or a heavy user browser. You got Google Chrome, which connects you to all your Chrome accounts. Each one has their own niche. It's just Microsoft Edge is kind of like in the middle of nowhere with an exact use yet.
And Chrome is very heavy, but I see there was a new feature because my browser updated now. If there's a lot of people have a lot of tabs open. If it is inactive for, say, 5 minutes or so, then it kind of suspends it until you go back to it again to save memory on your computer.
Yeah.
That was a new feature that I saw only recently on my Chrome. And I thought that was pretty cool because, in actual fact, when you only have like 4 gigs of RAM, that helps, you know.
Well, a great way to stress test how powerful your PC is how many tabs can you open in one single time?
Yeah, I'm just thinking that, Kane, that you've got like almost like 100 open. They're like small little things there at the top. There's so many of them.
They're just bullet points.
Yeah.
No, I must say I can open 100, but when you start getting to 100 tab mark, you might as well have none because it's just.
But you look like the guy. You look like that kind of guy who's got like at least 50 open.
I used to, and then I got really good at tab management. But
okay,
you will put your PC
through
the works.
How do you tab manage?
Don't leave tabs, like don't have a tab open that you're going to look at probably tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, like that's how it gets cluttered.
But I have this terrible habit of closing stuff. Like, it's almost like in real life, I like to, if it's cluttered, I like to just put it away. And I feel the same when I'm using a computer. And if I feel I've got too many browsers or tabs open, then I just close it. And it's usually to my own detriment because it's stuff I need later. But I'm trying to sort out my stuff. And I'm like, damn, the tab's closed now. I've got to log in again and all that stuff. I've got this terrible habit of closing stuff I think I don't need or deleting stuff I think I don't need. And then only to need it 10 minutes later.
Switch over. Keep working on things through tabs to creating internet shortcuts on your desktop.
That must teach me.
You don't get lost.
And that's another Tech Plus, Kane. It was a nice one, and I can't believe it's almost the end of the month.
It is.
How can it be April already almost?
I don't know.
And it's almost Easter.
Must be April Fools.
Yeah, definitely. But it was a good show. It was a nice comeback for you. Welcome back to the coastal area of South Africa.
Thanks. It's good
to be spending
back.
Some time in the City of Gold.
And thanks for all of our listeners for listening in. And we'll see you next week.
As always. Thanks, Kane. Have a good weekend.
Cheers, everyone.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.